And it's all on Classic Drive, RTE Lyric FM. We're just gone 20 minutes to six. Hope you're enjoying the show so far. It's Liz Nolan here with you and handing the reins over to Luke Clancy and Culture File.
This time on Culture File, we meet Lisa Marie Griffith, scholar and author of Stones of Dublin, a history that somewhere between figuratively and literally lifts the roof off some of the capital's most storied structures. Culture File met up with Lisa Marie at the National Print Museum, where she's coordinator of the Cultural and Heritage Studies programme, to hear some lost histories of Christchurch Cathedral, Croke Park and the colour green.
One of the stories that really stood out to me focuses on Christchurch Cathedral. I think we're all really familiar with Christchurch Cathedral as an Anglican cathedral. And of course, it would have started as a Roman Christian cathedral. And the people who were based there would have had all the same beliefs as Catholics. And they believe very strongly in saints and in relics and in miracles. And they had quite a lot of relics in the cathedral itself. So they had St. Patrick's Cross, for instance. And a lot of these relics would have been burned during the Reformation because they went against the Anglican faith. But one of my favourite stories about the relics focuses on a talking cross. And this talking cross, we know all about it from Gerald of Wales, who wrote about it in his book. And the talking cross was used, or a cross was used in the church as a witness to a loan agreement. And two parties who were there, one was loaning money to the other. There was no other witnesses around. So they swore in front of the cross to the loan agreement. And one party reneged on this loan agreement. And they found themselves in a difficult situation. The case went to court and they had no witnesses to back it up. So the court assembled in front of the cross in Christchurch Cathedral. And it's a really unusual case. So apparently lots of people were drawn to it. And as the proceedings went on, the cross apparently spoke and spoke the truth about the loan agreement. Dublin Castle is kind of a strange building, and I think it can be a bit of a strange building to explain for visitors to the city, because they think it's a palace and they think that royalty would have lived in the palace. And of course, that's not what Dublin Castle was used for at all. It was mainly administration. The treasury was there. Sometimes the parliament was there. And of course, there was a prison based in Dublin Castle. And again, during the Reformation, the prison would have been used to lock up what's known as recusants. A recusant is somebody who isn't practicing the correct legal faith, which is the Church of Ireland at the time. And one of the stories that we have of one of these recusants is a woman called Margaret Ball. And Margaret would have actually been a very brave and very courageous woman. She was a Catholic. She pursued her religion throughout the 1570s. She made her house just outside the skirts of Dublin a refuge for people who wanted to hear a Catholic mass. And her house was raided many times, and priest vestments were found there and evidence that she was allowing mass to be heard there. And eventually she was arrested. We know this happened in the 1580s. And what's really unusual about this story is that the person who came to arrest her was actually her son, who was the serving Lord Mayor at the time. So her son came to arrest her, and she was so old and frail at this time that they had to put her on a pallet and carry her to Dublin Castle through the streets, which I think would have created such a big scene. And people would have come out of their houses to see this, particularly if you have any kind of Catholic leanings. You would have felt huge sympathy for her. She was locked up in Dublin Castle on the order of her son, and she died there. One of the other stories that I like that I came across focuses on Croke Park. So the story that I had always grown up with, and the story that is always repeated about Hill 16, is that Hill 16 was actually created through the rubble that was left over from the GPO after the 1916 Rising. And this is where Hill 16 got its name. But actually, that's not true. If you look at the early years of the GAA, we know that the GAA had lots of very politically active nationalists involved in it. And many of these men who got involved in the GAA would have been members of the Irish Volunteers. And of course, in 1914, John Redmond encouraged these Irish volunteers to enlist in the British Army and to go and to fight and defend Home Rule. And thousands of them did. And as a result, lots of GAA members also went to fight in World War One. So Hill 16 was originally named Hill 60 rather than Hill 16. And it was named in honour of these Irish volunteers who died during the Battle of Gallipoli, taking 60 metres. And this was a battle that was an absolute disaster from the British side. Thousands and thousands of Irish and British soldiers died, and it was a huge tragedy. And one of the pieces that I came across was when news finally comes to Dublin that so many people have been lost in this battle, and everybody's talking about it, and everyone has a relative who died in this battle. So the GAA went out of their way to honour these Irish volunteers who had been members of the GAA, and they called the hill Hill 60 rather than Hill 16. And initially the GAA wanted to stay away from a lot of the politics of the 1916 Rising, and they could see how divisive it was becoming. But after a time, they realised that their sympathies really lay with the nationalists, and it's a couple of years later that they begin to allow nationalists to have their meetings in Croke Park, and the name then gets changed from Hill 60 to Hill 16 to kind of reflect these new allegiances. One of the stories that I really like about Kilmaine and jail is about Charles Stewart Parnell's time there. So everybody imagines today that green has always been the colour of nationalism, and it's our national colour, and everybody dresses St. Patrick in green. But actually the original colour of nationalism was blue, and the Irish flag would have been blue with a harp emblazoned on it. And green actually came about because the United Irishmen used green as their colour. So green was very much associated with nationalists. And when Charles Stewart Parnell was in Kilmainham jail, he was sent a huge amount of gifts to kind of make his time there a bit more comfortable. And apparently these gifts in particular came from lots of women. So he would be sent like kind of silk caps that, you know, they had handmade and hand embroidered his monogram into them. And apparently he got some green stockings as well. And one woman in particular sent him this very elaborate green kind of duvet that was kind of trimmed with gold, that must have really spent her a huge amount of time and money producing this. Unfortunately, what people did not know, and I think what Charles Stewart Parnell was afraid to say publicly, is that he hated the colour green. He absolutely hated it. So one account of his time there is about him shoving this beautiful green duvet that had been made for him into a wardrobe to hide it because he couldn't look at it. And supposedly someone once explained to him that actually blue had been the original colour of the Irish, and he said blue is almost worse because it's half green.
Lisa Marie Griffith, author of Stones of Dublin, at the National Print Museum there. And at the museum this Thursday, the Censored public lecture series gets to Censorship and Deception in the Printed Works of Jonathan Swift.